So many years ago, when I was still a student in college, I did some things that I now regret. And one of those things was that I used to smoke cigarettes. And for a few years, I really enjoyed smoking, and I was quite addicted to smoking. And there came a time when I decided that I wanted to quit. And so going ahead and quitting, it was very much one of the most difficult things that I've ever done, and one of the most painful things that I've ever done. And for a few months after quitting, my mind fell into a very dark place, and it was a place of incredible craving and desire and real misery. And, I really felt during that time like I would never be happy again. And I really felt like it was impossible to be happy if I wasn't able to smoke cigarettes. But after, a very long time, a period of several months, eventually that darkness lifted from the mind and I was able to be at ease again. And now, many years later, I haven't thought of smoking for a very long time. Many years, I haven't desired to smoke a cigarette for many years. And if I see someone smoking now, I don't feel any desire at all for that. It's just something which is just totally a neutral object to me now. And the thought that you can't be happy without cigarettes, now it seems like a ridiculous thought. But it wasn't so ridiculous back then. It seemed very real. Now, looking back, I can see that what my desire told me, now it's very clearly seen as something which is not true. It was a lie that my craving told me, that my desire told me. And this is actually one of the lies that desire is telling all of us. All of the objects that we desire, we always feel like we can't be happy unless we have that object. And it really seems very real, very true. But, actually the real truth is that if we're willing to work through that desire, there will come a time in the future when that desire passes away and then we have no more interest in that object. That object will become like just some kind of neutral object to us, and the feeling that that object is something incredibly special and important, is just a trick of our desire. It's just a lie that our desire tells us. So I tell this story because, I feel like it's a very good example of, a time in which my craving, my desire, told me something which seemed very real, and yet now many years later I can see that it's a lie. But this is only one of the many lies that our desire tells us, that our craving tells us. Another one of the lies that our craving tells us is that if we just get the object of our desire, then that will bring us real happiness. So we see pleasure in the world, but we don't see any pain or any kind of negative aspect to enjoyment, enjoying sensuality, enjoying the objects of the senses. We don't tend to see any kind of negative aspect to that. And the reality is that, all of the things that we enjoy in the world, when we take delight in things, we're also getting something else in addition to that pleasure. And it's something that tends to be hidden, that we tend to not really see until later. And that, of course, is the the suffering, the longing, the desire, the craving that arises when we no longer have that object. So the Buddha taught, you know, in many different similes and many different ways about sensuality, about the objects and experiences that we enjoy in the world. And, you know, one of the similes that he used was like delicious tasting poison. You know, it's like a drink that is delicious, but it has poison in it. And we tend to see the pleasant experience, but we don't really a lot of times realize later when the suffering arises, when the poisonous effect arises, we don't really necessarily tend to see where that comes from. But very much like the delicious poison, the experience of pleasure tends to be very short-lived, and the experience of suffering is something that stretches very far into the future. And, you know, when I quit smoking, you know, all of that suffering, all of the darkness that arose, you know, if I ask where did that come from, it's really a direct result of all of the enjoyment that I had taken in smoking before that time. So, you know, having enjoyed something, then in the future when we no longer have that, we have to experience craving and longing for it. I didn't really think of that at the time when I was enjoying myself smoking. I didn't think that I would have to experience real misery in the future. But that's, you know, that's the unfortunate reality of delighting in anything in the world, is that it always has that other aspect of longing that must arise in the future when we no longer have it. And, you know, it's very much like we can consider if, you know, if we have very strong craving for something like a durian fruit, you know, is it possible to crave a durian if we've never tasted it before? You know, of course, it isn't really possible. You know, that longing and craving, it comes from having delighted in it in the past, and to whatever extent we've delighted in it, then to that extent we will suffer in the future when it's gone. So this is, you know, also another unfortunate reality of sensuality, and another one of the lies that our craving tells us. You know, craving tells us that there's only pleasure, you know, in sensuality, in the objects that we desire. There's only pleasure there. The more you have, the more happy you'll be. You know, that's what our desire tends to tell us. If you just have a lot of money, if you just have a lot of the things you desire, then you'll have a lot of happiness. But, you know, actually the reality is that the more we have over time, the more longing and desire is created in the mind. And this is very much why, you know, as people get older, they tend to be more and more unhappy. You know, they tend to have more and more discontent. And it's just a natural result of having lived our whole lives chasing after the attractive, delightful, pleasant things of the world. You know, at some point it all comes back to torture us, really. You know, just like my story of quitting smoking, you know, in the end, when you, you know, at some point you lose those things, it will come back to haunt us in the end. And so this is another one of the lies that our desire tells us about the things that we desire in the world. And, you know, another one of the many lies that our craving tells us is that if we just get the object of our desire, then it will make us happy forever. You know, and we really do believe that. You know, it does really seem very real. We tend to perceive the world, objects in the world, as being very permanent. But the, you know, the reality I think that we've all experienced, you know, is that the objects of the world that we enjoy and delight in, you know, they're very much like, it's very much like watching a movie. You know, you might find the best movie in the world, the movie that you're the most interested in. And, you know, when you watch the movie, you would experience a lot of pleasure. But, you know, as soon as that movie is over, you know, after a few hours, you can never again watch that movie and experience that same amount of pleasure again. You can only experience a very small fraction of that pleasure again. And if we had thought in the beginning that that movie was going to make us happy forever, you know, that's just not true. You know, the unfortunate reality of our mind is that we just get bored with things. And that is, you know, that's a manifestation of impermanence. You know, the Buddha is telling us that everything is impermanent, but we don't really, you know, truly understand what that means. You know, it means that not only the objects that we enjoy are impermanent, but the way that it makes us feel is impermanent. So something that we enjoy today, we don't necessarily enjoy it as much the next day. You know, it's totally uncertain. It's totally unreliable. And this is why the Buddha said, you know, we live our whole lives always seeking fresh delight. And this is one of the definitions of craving, is always ever seeking fresh delight. So, you know, there's really, you know, whatever object we find that we delight in, we can never really grab that happiness, that pleasure. You know, we can never really keep it. It's always slipping through our fingers, you know, like trying to grab water or something. You know, it just slips through our fingers. So this is another one of the many lies that our craving tells us that seems, you know, so convincing, so real. And somehow, even though we kind of see this in a way, but we just keep falling for it, you know, over and over again. And, you know, reflecting in this way, reflecting on the different things that our mind tells us about the world. You know, this is the development of wisdom, the development of insight, really to question what our mind tells us about the things that we desire, the things that we have aversion towards, you know, really questioning whether it's really true what our mind tells us. And, you know, one of the great stories about Ajahn Chah, you know, he said if the fastest way to enlightenment was to point at your mind and say, liar. So it's, you know, it's very much with the things that we desire, the things that we have anger and aversion towards, the things that we're afraid of, you know, really basically everything that our mind is telling us is something that should be questioned, and especially if it's something that leads to suffering. And when we really, you know, reflect on it, we'll see that delighting in the objects of the world, you know, ultimately it is like the Buddha said, you know, the Buddha said that, you know, one who delights in sensuality, their sorrow swells like the grass after the rain. And we see that here, you know, when it starts to rain very heavily, suddenly the grass grows very, very fast and becomes very green. So the eventual result of delighting in the objects of the world is longing, desire, craving, discontent, unhappiness, the suffering. And I think it's also, you know, it's useful to reflect not only on the negative aspects of sensuality, but then to reflect on the path that the Buddha pointed out to us. You know, the Buddha taught a path that also leads to happiness, but it's very much like a road that travels in the opposite direction of sensuality. And it's a path that he assures us actually leads to real happiness. You know, the path of sila, samadhi, and punya, learning how to develop the mind through meditation to experience real peace and real happiness in our meditation. And I think it's very useful to contemplate the people who have lived both of those lives, or people who have walked both of those paths, to compare, you know, how happy are people who have lived a life of sensuality, how happy are people who have lived a life of cultivating happiness and meditation, and, you know, in considering the world of sensuality, you know, one of the particularly, you know, the kind of groups of people who maybe are at the forefront of the pleasure of the world, of people who win the lottery, you know, so you can imagine for many people, this is their dream to win a huge, you know, hundreds of millions of dollar lottery. And, you know, we really feel like if I could just win that lottery, you know, then I would be truly happy. And if we had hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, we could never have to work again. We could buy whatever we want and we could go wherever we want to go. So it really seems like, you know, for somebody who believes in sensuality and sensual happiness, it really seems like that would be the ultimate, you know, that would be the highest happiness. But it's, you know, it's quite fascinating that there have been studies that have been done about lottery winners. And actually, the, you know, people who win the lottery, they're not actually any happier than the average person over the long run. Like after, you know, the first year or something, it's quite fascinating, because that's really not, you know, not what we would think. But it's, you know, after we reflect on the nature of sensuality, of course, it makes sense, because, you know, ultimately in the long run, the more sensual pleasure we have, you know, like we've been saying, in the long run, just the more discontent we have, the more longing we have. And, you know, we can also reflect then on those great, you know, spiritual masters who have devoted their life to meditation and have really, you know, accomplished great things in their practice. You know, there are many, many stories, but yeah, one of my favorite stories about the great Chan Master Shuyun, and there are many great stories of his life, but there's this one, you know, one story where he was living in a cave and practicing meditation, and, you know, he's kind of the opposite of a sensualist. You know, he had basically nothing in his cave, you know, not really any possessions, no wealth, just living in his cave. And one day he just decided to cook some rice. And so he put the rice on the fire, and he went to wait for the rice to cook. And so he just sat in meditation for a few minutes, and his mind was so profoundly happy from, you know, all of the years of meditative development that he had worked for, that at that time his, you know, his mind dropped into a very incredibly peaceful state of meditation. And meanwhile, his friends nearby, they realized they hadn't seen him in a really long time, so they decided to go check on him. And they went up into his cave and they saw him sitting in meditation, and they walked up to him and they held a little bell up to his ear and just rang it very softly so that he would come out of meditation. And he came out of his meditative state, and to him it seemed like he had just only been sitting there for a few minutes. So he said, "Oh, the rice should be done now." And so he got up and walked over to the rice and took the lid off, and the rice was just covered in mold. And it turns out that he had actually been sitting there for like 2 weeks or something, and didn't even actually realize it. You know, these kinds of stories are quite amazing. You know, this is the kind of happiness which is possible for someone who really walks the path of the Buddha, you know, to a very deep level. They can experience states of happiness in which they're so incredibly content and peaceful that they're not even interested in eating anymore. You know, that's not something that, you know, even a lottery winner could experience. You know, even if you win the lottery, you're not going to be so happy that you just lose interest in eating or drinking. So this is these are just a few stories to contemplate. And the more that we consider these two paths, you know, the more we'll realize that this path that the the Buddha has given us, it is the real path to happiness. So these are just a few reflections for this evening. Offer that.